WGN.
Thank you, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Thursday afternoon. Dennis Rodkin from Crane Chicago Business is here as well. Dennis, welcome to the program.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Good. So traffic's okay because you had threatened to do this by phone.
I thought I'd be calling you from Lake Shore Drive. Yeah, it actually worked out just fine.
You know, one of the things that I think, big city, a lot to appreciate, and sometimes things that deserve our appreciation don't always get their due. Which is a long way of saying, I think we underestimate the Institute for Housing Studies at DePaul University.
I think we do underestimate. They crank out some really amazing data that tells you quite a bit.
And it's a nice little local look at where we live and how we live. And they came out with some numbers was it this week or last week?
Came out Tuesday.
About the home values over the past 15 years.
Yeah.
Some remarkable stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, some of it is, I think, is sort of, I hate to say it, confirming what we know, and that's that the neighborhoods that have been gentrifying in the city have had the biggest price growth in the past 15 years.
Okay, I knew that. I mean, I knew Logan Square, Lincoln Square,
yeah.
Avondale. I know those towns or areas have been doing well. I didn't know that in 15 years, the home value has more than doubled.
More than doubled. Well, the reason I say it sort of confirms what you've been seeing is, you know, if you were around 15 years ago, and you were and I was, some of those neighborhoods were kind of just getting going. So the reason you can see them expanding so much in this time is that they started at a lower base. When you look at an Evanston or a Winnetka, this is only Cook County data, so you can't look outside Cook County. When you look at a place like Evanston, Winnetka, they were already in pretty good shape in 2000. The places that were really getting sort of rejuvenated, going through a renaissance, the Lincoln Squares, the Logan Squares, Avondale coming along later, those are the ones that have grown the most in the past 15 years.
But you know what strikes me is, and they do look at these different regions in Cook County, and when you look at the suburbs, the biggest increase was in Winnetka and Northbrook. So those are,
yeah.
That's different. I mean, those are two very established already areas.
Part of the reason for that is that they didn't dip as much. So when you compare 2000 to 2015, in the middle there was a period where things went down and then had to come back up. And places like Winnetka, though they went down, didn't go down as much as a lot of other places.
So they kept maybe at times slower, but they kept the rise.
So over time, their total increase is a little bigger.
So Avondale or other suburbs, they had to not only do an increase over 15 years, they had to survive a big dip in the middle.
Right, yeah. And Avondale's actually kind of interesting because it was sort of poised to become the next big one in the city right as the boom was starting to collapse. And it was like Avondale, and then whoops. So being right on the edge, it kind of dropped real hard. But then as soon as things picked up again, Avondale just took off. I called it to one of my editors the neighborhood of the century because we're only 15 years into the century, but it has
changed.
But
so far.
Yeah, it's gone crazy.
Well, and so I was surprised in reading what you wrote in Crane's about how the realtors, a lot of them, didn't even see Avondale coming.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, my next question to you is, okay, where should I invest? You know, what's next?
Well,
and maybe
I think,
they don't know.
Well, yeah, it's really sort of the next step west, because one of the things we don't see coming is any more disinvestment. On the north side, we don't see any more disinvestment, so you don't see any neighborhoods dropping. So probably you just go next to the ones that have done real well. But you saw the numbers for the south parts.
Well, I was going to say, that's right? The good news. The bad news is, if we go down to Calumet City and Harvey, they've dropped a quarter of their value in those 15 years.
They're below, yeah. So if we're talking about these north side places where values have doubled in 15 years, in the south suburbs and some parts of the south side of the city, prices are lower. According to the IHS, prices are lower now than they were in 2000. And those were places that were starting at a relatively low base as well. And they were, most of them, very, very hard hit by the foreclosure crisis and those kinds of things. But we've generally come back. They are still, in some cases, as you pointed out, 20% below where they were 15 years ago.
I mean, that seems to me to be a pretty desperate situation.
I think desperate is one word for it. And it's also when you think of the way those two, if you were just to look at, say, Calumet City and Avondale and see the way they have diverged, you're seeing, I've talked about it in here a million times, there are two different recoveries going on in Chicago. It's hard to count Calumet City even as going through a recovery.
If you're down 25%.
Yeah. The rich get richer and other people go in the other direction.
Dennis Rodkin is with us from Crane Chicago Business, and he writes a great piece about it. You should check it out. And then there's another thing I want to talk to you about. And it's only because I could bring up the owner of the Admiral Theater.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. The owner of the Admiral Theater, which is
a strip club. Former burlesque theater up on Lawrence.
Is living in Barrington and is trying to sell his house for $13 million.
And that's a price cut. It was over 15.
That is a lot of lap dances, $13 million. I mean, who knew?
I could not say that in my story. I'm glad you did, Steve. Yeah, you know, if you want to pay him in singles, it's going to difficult.
Is that his only source of revenue? I mean, is that his...
As I understand it, he had a club in Las Vegas
okay,
as well.
Okay, but clubs, but yeah. Strip clubs.
And there may be other business interests. But part of, so his house was an example in a story about fantasy pricing. He's a guy who works in the fantasy business.
I just wanted to talk about the strip club.
You just there. Okay, yeah. Well, we're going to one later together, aren't we?
Yeah.
It's this idea that a lot of times people build a super custom house. I put everything in it that works so well for my family and this great, you know, marble that we just loved and that sort of thing. And I've got so much money into the house that I want to get all that back out when I sell. And sometimes that price is a little bit of a fantasy.
Isn't that what we all do? But this is just, it's bigger numbers because
yeah.
It starts at a bigger price.
Exactly, right. Because I have more than I can dump into the house. And I also probably have built a larger house. So with each square foot I'm finishing, I'm spending more money.
And who wouldn't want this wet bar in the master bedroom?
Exactly.
This is worth a lot of money.
Yeah, right. And we need separate elevators in the two different wings of the house. And we've got indoor and outdoor pools. This is not describing his house, but...
This is describing mine.
This is, right, exactly. And so you end up with this huge investment in the house... Michael Jordan's a great example.
Right.
You know,
he went to auction, couldn't sell it, still up for sale.
That thing's been on sale for so long. You know what I want to see happen? They're trying to build a new junior high in Highland Park where his house is. I think the school district should buy his house and make it Michael Jordan Junior High. It's almost big enough. It's 56,000 square feet. They need a little over 100,000
yeah,
to build a junior high.
I know where his house is, and there's some big cash neighbors there who probably wouldn't want school buses in their front yard.
They've had an empty house next to them for years and years. What do you think?
Dennis Rodkin from Crane Chicago Business. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Steve.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. It's 12:23. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Time to check in with Ian Scherer of CNET.com. And Ian, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good. Were you surprised by the question? I don't usually ask, I'm afraid.
I always like hearing it, though.
I want to know about, and you know, this. Let's go back to the, not the last Republican presidential debate, but the one before that. Chris Christie, or one of the candidates, was asked about these online sports fantasy leagues. Give me the names. I can never think of the names of them. FanDuel.
FanDuel is one of them, and the other one is called DraftKings. So they're the biggest
DraftKings,
one.
Right.
And then, of course, there's Yahoo.
And so Chris Christie, you know, belittled the question. He's like, we got real problems in the world, and we're talking about sports fantasy. But I thought that was unfair. I think this is a legitimate question. This seems to me to be sort of sanctioned gambling, advertised on TV, sponsored in many ways by, or was pushed, I know they pulled back, by ESPN. But in New York, they're looking at this stuff now and sort of making FanDuel and DraftKings fight for their lives, right? They could be in trouble.
They could be in trouble. So the problem revolves around this issue of whether or not they are considered to be games of skill versus games of chance. And this is a lot of legal mumbo jumbo that was created many years ago to basically allow those of us who have like a office pool for a baby, for example, or even a fantasy league among friends, not to be technically breaking the law.
Right.
The
problem is that...
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, but it's technically breaking the law to have an NCAA pool, right? Or to have an NFL.
Well, that's the thing, right? So they created these laws that say, no, it's actually okay. But they never imagined FanDuel and DraftKings and these ginormous companies would pop up. And so over the last couple of years, fantasy sports, as those of us who have a television or radio at all know, has become a huge business.
Sure.
And it's become multi-billion-dollar business. And then what happened was that a couple of months ago, the New York Times broke the news that there were a couple of people inside FanDuel and DraftKings who were actually cheating the system and basically using information about their players to get ahead. and to win in the fantasy sports leagues. So it became a big to-do. The government got involved. And now we're finding out that Yahoo, which also runs a fantasy sports, and of course they've had fantasy sports for many years, but they started a kind of one where you could bet and all that stuff, just like FanDuel and DraftKings. They are getting roped into the New York Attorney General, who is investigating all of this. And what it's looking like more and more is that these companies are really fighting to be able to exist without having to deal with the same things that Las Vegas deals with, that the slot machines in other states have to deal with, which is very harsh and hard regulation.
Well, they
these
should
have largely been unregulated.
It's ridiculous. I mean, you know, they're calling it a game of skill because you're picking your fantasy team. So your skill is that you know that Alex Rodriguez hits very well against the Texas Rangers. That's not your skill. You're still betting. It's still a game of chance. You're betting on whether Rodriguez is going to get three hits tonight or two hits or no hits.
I'm not going to get into the politics of it, but I will point out that there are people who actually have built crazy, like, intricate algorithms that are telling them how these things go. And that's what's fascinating. If you listen to NPR, they did a really great story about how there's this guy who they found who has an algorithm he's created that tells it that factors in wind speed and the time of day and how the ball is hit and all that stuff to figure out which team will likely win so that he can win in fantasy sports. And it's gotten so good for him that he's become his full-time job.
So does that make it a game? So that makes it a game of skill.
That's what the argument could be, right? But the other end of it, of course, is that most of us don't know anything. And so it's a lot of it is chance and just how you pick your team. So it's really fascinating to watch. We'll see whether or not anything changes. But again, what I think is most interesting here is that it's the story of unintended consequences, right? The government created these laws around skill and chance to essentially allow us, normal people, Joe Schmucks, to have little betting things in our basements,
right, with our friends. Right.
And not have the cops come in. But what it's turned into is these multi-billion-dollar companies that are unregulated.
And I guess
so it'll be interesting to see whether or not that changes.
Yeah, and you can't blame FanDuel or DraftKings. I mean, they're looking at a market and they're exploiting it. Good for him. That's what we do. Look, we're out of time today, Ian. I appreciate you joining us. And
My pleasure.
I'll call you about our Thanksgiving pool, see who wins on the football games. Ian Schur from CNET. You bet. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. All right, if you don't read well, you might not work well. Certainly tough to find a job. And how about businesses? What do they do with what is at times an illiterate workforce? That's one of the topics of the State of Literacy Symposium that is going on today. In fact, it is the first ever. The Chicago Literary Alliance is hosting it. And from the Chicago Citywide Literacy Coalition, we are joined now by Becky Raymond. Becky, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here, Steve.
Literacy is one of those things that we talk about, but maybe not very concretely. Do we know what percentage of Chicago or the Chicago area population is illiterate?
Well, in the city of Chicago, we estimate that 30% of adults have low basic skills and would benefit from adult literacy services. That's an estimated 880,000 people.
So you're saying one in three would benefit from better reading?
Yes, that's right.
That's a pretty amazing statistic. I would not have guessed it was that high.
Yes, it's a combination of individuals who did not complete high school, immigrants who would benefit from English as a second language classes, and some adults that even have high school diplomas, but their skills are lower than what we really need to contribute to the workforce.
Okay, does it break down by generation at all? I mean, are these older people? Are they younger people somewhere in the middle?
Actually, it's sad to say, but in the United States, there was recently an international study of adult skills, and in the U.S., the younger generations are lagging behind their older counterparts in terms of basic skills in reading, numeracy, and digital problem solving. So There are older adults in programs for sure, but the youth, their skills are behind their older counterparts.
That's a pretty fascinating thing if you think of it. I mean, you know, it might be one thing for us to have caught up on literacy so that the older generations are not the better readers, but it sounds to me like we're falling behind on it.
Yeah, and that's not the case globally. Some countries, the youth are way outperforming their older counterparts, but that's not the case here in the United States.
All right, so let's take this to the workplace then. I mean, I guess it would be pretty clear that if you don't read well, you're going to have a hard time finding a good job, right? Fair to say.
Yeah, it is. But of those with low skilled, 63% are actually employed, but they're in low-wage jobs, and they lack the necessary skills to go on to college or advance in their careers. So even with the issue of, you know, low basic skills, many are still working, but they're not able to get ahead.
And so they're trapped, right? They would be better. They would bring home more money if they were able to read. Let's get it from the C level, though, or from the offices, the boss's point of view. Is it trouble then when it comes to hiring people and to creating a workforce?
Oh, yeah. We hear from employers quite a bit about having a difficult time finding qualified candidates, recruiting, and retention. We hear a lot about what's termed soft skills, that, you know, low-skilled adults don't have the polished, the presentation, the interaction skills necessary to be the employees of today.
So this seems to be one of the things we can fix, right? I mean, if we can teach people to read better, we can teach them to earn more and work better for the bosses.
Right.
And that's what the is that what the symposium is about today, and to figure out ways to do that? Or I would imagine you already know how to do it. What do we need to do to make it happen?
Well, one thing that adult education providers are taking on is a concept called bridge programs, so that the adult education programs are tailored to a specific sector, and that the adults with very low skills from early on in their education are learning contextualized information, receiving contextualized curriculum in areas of, say, manufacturing or healthcare or transportation distribution and logistics, so that it's very customized to the career path that that individual will pursue. And we find that these bridge programs, they help with retention as well, because the adults are coming back to education. And that's not easy to do as an adult at any level. But to have it customized and tailored to your career goals that are going to turn into, you know, security for your family, that helps the adult stay in programs.
That's fascinating, you know, because I've just been reading about different forms of education for kids. And if you give them, you know, rather than having them sitting at a desk and doing memorization and things, if you give them projects or give them learning possibilities within their life, their retention is better. And so in many ways, you're saying here, if you teach them within the shell that already exists in their workplace or wherever, they're more likely to do better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think of anyone. If I were to go back to a master's degree or PhD, I would want to know what's in it for me. And adult students, adult basic education students, are no different. So the field is transforming to meet their needs, to help them understand what this education is going to bring for them in the long term.
So I would imagine if you're in this business, you have a degree of hope. I mean, should the rest of us be hopeful? Is this something that we can make improvements on and are going to make improvements on?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And the Literacy Symposium, the State of Literacy Symposium, is a great step in that direction, because we'll be bringing together literacy experts across the spectrum, and by uniting our efforts, that's where the hope comes. So I encourage everyone to go to ChicagoLiteracyAlliance.org and follow what's happening here at the Literacy Center and tune in for the symposium.
Becky Raymond of the Chicago Citywide Literacy Coalition, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Orion Samuelson, Kim Gordon, and Laura Vaughn. Jason Lesnevich is here now from Choose Chicago. And, well, so Jason, we usually talk on Thursdays about things that are coming up over the weekend and everything. And so it's kind of going to be fun, I think, for this Lights Festival, Milwaukee. I want to say it right because I know it's not. The Magnificent Mile Lights Festival is Saturday evening.
It is.
And it's going to be fun. They'll start with a snowplow in front of Mickey Mouse. And
definitely, you know, I think the snow will add to the festivities. You know, they're saying anywhere about 4 inches on Saturday. But
well, that's what an optimist would say, Jason.
There you go. I'm always an optimist. And right outside the studio here, of course, on the Magnificent Mile will be the Great Lights Festival. It's a yearly tradition. Many families start their holiday traditions right here on the Mag Mile. It's led by Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse and all their Disney friends marching down Magnificent Mile from Oak Street to the river, and it culminates in a fireworks show right on the river.
It really is a fun afternoon, you know, no matter what, and it's mobbed, I think, a lot of times.
It's a big crowd.
But it's worth it. I was in the parade once, years and years ago, and luckily enough with my kids, you know, and we just had a gas.
Yeah.
And the fireworks are wonderful, and it will be better with the snow.
I think so. Really festive. The lights will look great in the snow. And, you know, all the buildings, around 200 buildings light up, over a million lights throughout the Mag Mile.
It's not like traffic would be an issue at all.
No, not at all. Definitely take the CTA, Metro. Parking gets a little difficult.
No, but they're going to do it. It's going to be fun. You're going to like it. The Chris Kindle Market starts, too.
It does.
This weekend. Is it tomorrow?
It does start Friday. It's the traditional German market right on Daly Plaza.
I cannot believe that that's been there for 20 years now.
I know. You know, I remember, you know, I was a German language student in college, and we'd have to
How's
go there.
How's that working out for you?
You know, I haven't used my German in a long time.
All right, well, let's do the segment in German.
There we go. And how about next week? So get me prepared a little bit.
It's Thanksgiving.
But they used to make us go there to practice our German, because a lot of the vendors supposedly do come right from Germany.
I bet the vendors love that.
Yeah. Yes, you know, a bunch of German language students trying to speak with them. Yeah.
How do you say blown glass Christmas ornament in German?
That I'm not sure, but I always tell my mom every year, she's an ornament freak, that they have some of the best glass blown ornaments around. And it's great to go and handcrafted wooden toys, and the food and the drink is also great.
You know, it's a mixed crowd, isn't it? Because people do go to shop and do the Christmas stuff, but it becomes like, I mean this in the best way, it's a real downtown office happy hour spot too.
It is, absolutely.
It's a great beer garden in there, and it's just a cool Chicago thing to do.
Definitely.
You know, and as I look through these things, there are a lot of great. Now, that the tree lighting is Tuesday.
It is, the 24th, next Tuesday.
And that is not near the Kindle Market.
First time this year. Chris Kindle Market.
It's at Millennium Park.
It is. And that's right, if you're, I guess, to the north of the ice rink.
I'm
so right at Washington.
I'm feeling bad for the Picasso, just so you know.
I'm sorry. I
am a little bit. I mean, I'm a little concerned about our loop.
Okay.
You know, that they're moving. That was a place where people would go. It would bring people into the loop. And now they're moving it to Millennium Park.
Yes. You know, possibly a little more foot traffic. It'll be proudly displayed right at Washington and Michigan. You can't miss it. If you're coming east on Michigan right into the park, it'll be displayed right there. And, you know,
will see it, I think.
I think so. Yeah.
But again, the Picasso, well, the Picasso will be all by itself.
Yeah, I know.
And that the tree lighting is Tuesday.
It is.
And Renee Fleming is going to sing?
Yeah.
Very nice.
She'll perform. Some cast members from Charlie Brown's Christmas will perform. I think a Latin music ensemble will perform as well. That starts at 5:30. The actual lighting happens at 6 p.m.
All right. So all of that is ahead. And the Marshall Field, the Macy's windows are already up and going, right?
They are, yes. Obviously, a lot of people will come downtown. They go to Chris Kindle Market, maybe go to the Thanksgiving Day Parade and check out Macy's windows. I mean, it's a tradition that's been going on for years. And the windows this year do always have a theme. It's called Santa's Journey to the Stars, and it follows a young boy who receives a magical telescope, and he can look down on Earth from other planets before landing back just in time for Christmas.
That's Jason Lesnevich from Choose Chicago. All right, well, listen, enjoy the parade on Saturday.
I will.
And maybe you'll be in the front with the broom sweeping the snow away.
Yes.
Because we don't want Minnie to get her feet snowy.
Absolutely.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.